People are still joining, but we'll go ahead and start. First of all, thank you everyone for joining. Again, those who have not seen these before, I am Louis DeLucia of Ice Miller. On the video with me from Ice Miller, we are counsel to the AIRN Liquidation Trust and trustee. And Michael Ott is also on the phone on the video with me from Ice Miller. But more importantly, from the Liquidation Trust and the AIRN Management Co., we have Matthew Ward from the representative of the Liquidation Trust as trustee, as well as Rick Budd, and I believe Tommy Fierro from AIRN as well. And we have seen your questions and have gone over them internally, but we'll give you some updates before we address those questions. So the agenda is as we followed in prior meetings, essentially the introductions, which I just gave, a quick real estate update. For those who would like a real estate update, that will be provided largely by Rick Budd. We will address any and all tax questions regarding the K-1s that were asked in the portal. That will be largely Tommy Fierro. And then Mike Ott and I will provide both a litigation update and a claims reconciliation update. And Matthew Ward will, of course, on behalf of the trustee, provide any insight and comments near the end. So that is the general oversight of the overview of the agenda, including, of course, questions answered on behalf of investors as submitted through the portal. Just generally, for some ground rules, what we say here can oftentimes be at a higher level than you'd like, 30,000 feet, perhaps sometimes cloaked in some confidentiality or obscurity, and that is because I can tell you, you know, quite frankly, we have lived through actual evidence of adversaries in our matters, listening and taking transcriptions of these recordings and using them in court, saying, well, the liquidation trustee said this, or their counsel said that, in response to adversary proceedings and lawsuits that we'll walk through during this call, as well as in settlement negotiations that they have used to counter some of our statements that might have been said in negotiation. So in other words, they listen, or adversaries and people we're investigating listen and sometimes use this information. So we're going to be careful in how we say stuff. We may not be precise all the time as to who we're speaking about for reasons that are in your best interest in preserving the litigation claims against many, many people they were pursuing. So with that caveat and in those introductions, we'll start with the first of the agenda items, which is the real estate update. So I'll turn the podium over to Rick Budd for that update.
Okay, thanks, Louis, and good evening, everybody. Just a couple things. We've talked in the past about the importance of interest rates. We all know it's in the news a lot more today, and the news appears to be headed in the right direction. So for us, for you, right, lower interest rates mean lower cap rates, mean higher values, lower borrowing costs, easier to get construction, more parties interested. So, you know, hasn't happened yet, but hopefully September is going to start that, and that's going to endure to all of our benefits. Just one thing, or a couple things. One, when in the bankruptcy, we entered with three secured loans, three mortgage loans, all in default, all with my term usurious. All the lawyers will faint, but unruly interest rates. Some where they had claims probably in excess of $55 million. I'm happy to report that, you know, we've all jointly, you know, with the Ice Miller team, we've resolved all of those mortgages. One we've refinanced out. Another one is just awaiting a settlement agreement to be done. And the third one, we have a settlement agreement and we're waiting for the property sale to close. So that's a big burden off the estate from that standpoint. Just to jump around a bit, try to touch on the assets, the Brooklyn property, which was one of those that had a mortgage, an unruly mortgage, I should say, 506 Henry Street. We do have a contract for sale there. We would expect that to close. And notwithstanding lack of equity in the property, we will come away with cash there above what we had forecast. So that's good news. We have a $5 million contract for two properties in Guttenberg, New Jersey. We've had that contract for a while. There were some environmental challenges, logistics. We were in court as late as yesterday, trying to resolve with the buyer. Hopefully we get there. If we don't get there, we'll be back to listing the property, and we think the values have only gone higher. But if we can get a resolution, that would be great too, but under the right terms. We have the property 4901 Bergen Line, the station, 97 units. We got that CMO last year. It was fully leased up. We are now in the renewal period after a year. The renewals are going pretty well. We also have a retail tenant, a grocer for the entire first floor. It's a great building and the neighborhood, and I'll tell you why the neighborhood is important. The tenant the grocer has been struggling with the town of West New York for their building permit. We had a hearing on September 5th, which we will be attending with the tenant and their counsel. If you're in the neighborhood, come out and support the tenant for the building permit. We're hopeful of getting that done. We can then look at selling the building, potentially, I would say early 25, but we really need to have that resolved with the tenant and the construction started. The around the corner, which is also why the grocer is important, we have the Grand, which is 156 units, that is substantially completed. We expect our certificate of occupancy there by the end of September. We had obtained, I think we talked about it last time, but we had obtained a construction loan to complete the last portion of the building. That's in place. We hope to start leasing there, or at least showing the building sometime at the end of this month or early September for occupancy by a party, by the end of the month when we get the CMO. Our Metroland, which is next door to the Grand, again, sounds like a recurring theme. West New York is giving us a problem with the building permit. We couldn't build there, obviously. There was a COVID issue, and then there was the bankruptcy issue, which was preventing us. So they've held up our building permit. So we need to go back to court, again, getting the resolution or getting the clarification from the judge to present to West New York. We think that'll happen. We're not ready to build there anyway, but it needs to be cleaned up just to establish the proper value for that metro land. As we move south, our Philadelphia land, which is permitted, approved and permitted for more than 800 units, has started to draw significant interest. For those of you, in the area, Comcast is building a $2.5 billion expansion within a mile and a half of our complex. So we really believe that's enhancing value. We've seen substantial recent interest, particularly on the joint venture side, which, of course, without getting into details, can create a multiple of what had been forecast for a return. But it's premature. But anyway, the news is getting better there, for sure. If we go down to Florida, we have three completed homes in Delray with certificates of occupancy ready to sell or for sale. The market's been very slow there the last 6 months. We are making a change this week, actually, from a broker standpoint. Whether that's the answer or not, we'll find out. But these are, beautiful homes with beach access, and we know we will move these. It's just a matter of time. We have two parcels in Fort Lauderdale, identical parcels. One's approved for 389 units. The other's in approval process for 429 units. Again, people have been coming out of the woodwork in the last 45 days. Again, we believe specifically tied to lower rates, more availability of capital, et cetera. So we're hopeful of having something positive to report there in the next few months. Fort Myers, as you know, was substantially destroyed by Hurricane Ian. Right now, our demo is complete on the land where we had a hotel, a retail building. And then we've also completed the demo in the harbor. Boats have been removed. Pilings have been removed. We're permitted and ready to go for us or for anybody else to rebuild the marina. We are also with the design review committee in Fort Myers for the upland piece to increase that capability or that capacity up to potentially 500 units, which again, we think will only inure to the value of the project. So again, we believe that should happen before the end of the year. So just a reminder on this, if you see newspaper articles or television reports, sometimes about the approvals, it'll talk about, you know, a 10-year approval, which is great. That's flexibility. It's not like we're waiting 10 years. It just gives us or the next owner or the buyer or the developer, whoever it is, that flexibility to deal with it. So just wanted to make sure there was no confusion with that. So anyway, just a final reminder that it's just every transaction we look at, every transaction we do, we're undertaking it with you as investors in mind. And our goal is to obtain as much back for you as possible. That's it.
Thanks, Rick. And if questions come up in the context as we go through the questions about the real estate, we'll come back to you, Rick, with some of those questions. But we'll go ahead and start the investigation and litigation update. So, like I mentioned, we're going to be a little circumspect in terms of how we address some of these things, but we'll give you a quick summary of where we are on a number of these litigations, some of our investigations and depositions that have been taken. And let's see if I can share something. I'm going to try to do that here if this works. So let's see. All right. Are you able to see now this particular PDF? Is that visible to everybody? All right. So this is generally speaking the litigation summary. So we've been doing. You're going to see a couple of things. There's really three paths that we've been going down. One is those. We've been investigating, speaking to people, finding out information, obtaining information to find where the money and where the assets may have gone so that we can trace those. So some people that may not have been sued yet does not mean that they're not on our radar or that we haven't settled with them or that we are in the process of settling with them or discussing settlement. So just because you don't see someone named here, don't think that they are not they are off our radar and or not in dialogue with us. But let's start with this. In this interim period, we have been speaking to a lot of people. We've also done some interviews. So for example, we met with Nicholas Elzano and met with him actually technically twice, but once for a full-blown interview, which is going to be followed up again to obtain information in connection with all the transactions that happened here. And you know, we're not going to get into great detail, but there are points here and there where he was helpful in suggesting information, and there are areas where we were frustrated. So I will tell you that that is a continuing dialogue we're having with Nicholas Selzano. We also met with Art Scaturo for a day-long interview, which will be followed up. Again, helpful information in connection with some issues, but he is someone, of course, that is also being sued, against whom there is a guilty plea, as you know, and we do not have the information yet on how long or what his sentencing will be, but we'll find out what that is and share it when we know it. AJ Scaturo, his son, is someone who is scheduled to be met with us in the near future. Both of, you know, he and AJ the father and AJ are both sued in an action in connection with the taking of certain investments in cash, but they are, you know, in the process of discussing themselves as well as information they have regarding others that might be sources of recovery. So one thing to know, by the way, is a number of these people that we're speaking to, as well as the folks that aren't on this list with whom we're in some discussions, we've started a process. That process includes the sharing of the sharing with them of a questionnaire that we require that they produce to us to summarize for us what their assets are and what their liabilities are under oath and or verified, so that we can then have A&M, Alvarez & Marcel, or Rick Barry go in and confirm those assets, so that we know that if we have, for example, a $30 million claim against one of these entities, but they only have $1 million to pay us, we're not going to chase them with $2 million of legal fees to get only $1 million. But we will know what our recovery parameters are from these bad actors, if any, and we will get a good sense of the asset recovery. So we're doing that as part of this analysis, both liability, finding out how liable they are, looking at the legal and factual implications, gathering information from these interviews, as well as the assets that they have, so that we know what we can collect. And in a moment, in short order, I'll be telling you how those discussions are panning out. We also met with Coley O'Brien more than once. As you know, he's also one of the folks who were leading the charge at NRIA. We obviously met and interviewed Glenn LaMattina. We have also met repeatedly with Haresh Sheth and his counsel, with John Collins through investigators, Rich Stabile. As you know, these are folks who worked at the company and were gathering information. They're pointing us to information. They're pointing us to databases. They're pointing us to emails or communications that might have occurred that get us liability against others, if you understand the path, as well as potentially what they may have in terms of exposure. We met with Eric Miller, an employee of NRIA, formerly of TD. We met with Alan Fallis, who is being sued as a promoter, an insider promoter, for facilitating security sales. Kulraj Anand, another individual who was once employed by the company. Brian Casey, you all probably know, as coming in, where he's met with him. And there are many, many others that Alvarez, Marcel, and Rick Barry have interviewed in all the periphery of these particular targets, which have been productive and fruitful in getting information. We've also taken numerous depositions. So, for example, we've deposed Dipit Anand, an individual with whom Salzano conducted substantial business, and against whom this trust believes it has substantial claims. Adam Levine, also in his fund, has also been deposed, and we are suing them as well. Dustin Salzano, John Farina, both of whom run USC, of course, and we are obviously suing them, and we'll talk about them in a minute. Javier Torres and Media Effective, not only have we sued them, but we're awaiting a judgment. We'll talk about that in a minute. We deposed Bill O'Reilly and media companies surrounding Bill O'Reilly, First Digital, Red Seat. We've deposed Weingold, and we're suing Weingold. Bethany Salzano and Kyle Stefferni were both teed up for depositions. They failed to appear, asserted the fifth, and have been sued. So that's an example of just some of the investigatory. It's a high level type summary of where we've been moving. These are, and just quickly scrolling through, some of the 18 or so lawsuits that we are affirmatively pursuing. We're being sued in one that was mentioned by Rick briefly about the Gutenberg property, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But then we also have these categories of banks, law firms, accounting firms, feeder funds and promoters, advertising and marketing companies, internet scrubbers, and others with whom we are speaking and are talking, and in some cases talking numbers to get us settlements and funds and resolution in order to bring this case to a maximum recovery for you. So going back to the top, Media Effective. Media Effective, Javier Torres, and others, we have sued them. We've had numerous hearings. They are some of the folks that have used what we've said on these recordings and on these hearings, on these town halls at hearings, you know, inappropriately, as we said in court. But we were waiting a decision because the judge has heard all the testimony. We had closing statements and we are awaiting decision. In that case, just to remind you, we're suing them for what we asserted are damages of $127 million for facilitating the securities fraud, fraudulent conveyances that exceed $12 million. We have frozen in that case, 8 million plus in cash and a $2 million residence roughly. And we have also sued the third parties here, such as the church receiving over $500,000 in fraudulent transfers, we believe, and other family members who receive transfers. So that's an example of one that is gone and we're literally awaiting Judge Sherwood's opinion. We've sued Cipolla, the accounting firm that did work in connection with NRIA. That is also pending. They filed a motion to dismiss, which is standard. It's either that or an answer that people file. We're in discussions with them. In fact, we're awaiting scheduling a meeting, a second meeting with them for tomorrow to see if that occurs for furthering settlement discussions. Shaw and Mona Shaw and her law firm, of course, you know that we've sued them as well in connection with the EB-5 raising of funds. That has been set for mediation. Visions Federal, we have resolved that one where we have successfully obtained, as for example, a resolution and settlement with them. And we are negotiating settlement with Fannie Mae over $400,000+ of liability we believe they have for frauds on conveyance. Eric Weingold filed a motion to dismiss. He is the lawyer that goes by ppmlaw.com or something. I forgot the exact name, but he essentially did all the private placement memoranda through and up to roughly 2021 when Reed Smith stepped in and is being sued for all of those actions. They have filed a motion to dismiss. We had attempted to discuss some terms of settlement, didn't work out, but he's a small law firm, but we're suing and that he does have insurance coverage. DMR Construction, several lawsuits that relate to DMR. They are more project related as well as claims related. And that is in some settlement discussions as well. Both DMR, Echeverria, and USC, who is a little lower down in this list, are all also subject to a very, very substantial motion that we filed in this interim period, which is a motion to say that the bulk, if not all of their claims, are joint venture agreement claims. Under the plan that was confirmed by the judge, these JVA claims, and in particular in their context, their contractor JVA claims, are class six claims. Class six claims are claims that are subordinate to your claims. So they don't get paid until after you. That motion is pending, and the judge and DMR has agreed not to contest that, as I understand it. And we're waiting for Echeverria and USC to advise how they're going to respond. We've had some conversation with USC about those claims, but those are millions and millions of claims that would be adjusted for the benefit of the investors. So moving on, that's the same with Echeverria construction litigation. There is a passive insider action. That's what we call it. Some of these claims and lawsuits we have as buckets that we internally call them. I'm sharing that with you. That's the passive insider action. These are folks who were internal at the company that essentially just transferred assets amongst themselves, family members. Each of these people here, such as Olina, Thomas Nicholas Salzano, Thomas N. Salzano, Ray Gravato, his entity, Jamie Samuel, Salzano's former wife, the babysitter is in here, the children of Samuel, the other individuals here that were just basically received funds as fraudulent transfers because they were affiliated with Salzano and Salzano paid them money. So Samuel, for example, received hundreds of thousands in alimony paid by NRIA for the benefit of Salzano and child support, I guess it is, that was paid, and we're asserting fraudulent transfer claims in connection with those payments. That's that passive insider claim. Certain law firms are being sued, and there are others we're looking at and talking to that are being sued for payments made by NRIA for the defense of insiders of the company. So, for example, payments made for the benefit of one of the perpetrators or the bad actors, NRIA should not have paid for those legal fee defense claims, and those are no benefit to the estate. And so those are some of the fraudulent transfer claims. Many of those payments went through a law firm where an individual known as Jeff Harris worked, and we were looking at those claims. That's, for example, item numbers 9, 10, and 11, the Arleo, Cravatin, and Michael Critchley firms. We are suing accounting firms. So, example, Whipley was an accounting firm that did a lot of work for NRIA. They filed a motion to dismiss, but we anticipate having further discussions with them. And there are others we are looking at very heavily and very closely, and are very close to bringing action against. The insider complaint relates to a complaint we filed against Bethany Salzano, Kyle Stefferni, and their companies, because they received substantial funds. We were going to take their deposition before the lawsuit pursuant to Rule 2004 in the bankruptcy case and the bankruptcy procedures, but they took the Fifth and failed to appear. So we sued them. We anticipate they'll do the same here. But Bethany is, as you know, Nick Salzano's daughter. Kyle is his son-in-law, married to Bethany, and those are their two entities that received substantial funds. They bought a house, they bought a boat with some money diverted, and Bethany was in the inner room with Gravato, with Nick Salzano, and Bethany. And there are substantial allegations as to Bethany. Whether or not they have capacity to pay us, the amount of the claims we think we have against them is a different story. But we are pursuing claims against them. The insider promoters, a major case we also brought against Brian Harrington, their entities. For example, Grand Class Development is the entity Brian Harrington had, to which payments were made for his compensation. That's how they did things at the company. That compensation were commissions for all these people, commissions for the sales of securities that were not properly registered by them individually as not registered agents. So these are violations of security laws, according to our complaint, and are fraudulent transfers, etc. This is millions and millions of dollars to be pursued here. Whether or not they'll all be collectible, we don't know. But certain of these defendants have filed a motion to dismiss. Others are in settlement discussions. So that is another complaint that we are pursuing. S3 Manhattan, 1300 Manhattan, that's one of the favorable mortgage cases that Rick referred to earlier. That we're having some settlement discussions on as well, that should result in, and I should give my hats off to Rick in terms of his efforts to negotiate both this, the TORAC settlement to which he was referring, and others where, he really led the brain trust for the real estate side of that, that got us those recoveries. So that is a real positive for that. U.S. construction, that's a big litigation, of course. We have had just this week a meeting with U.S. Construction and its principals. At that meeting included Nick Salzano, Dustin Salzano, John Farina, and their counsel. We have mediation set up starting September 10th with U.S. Construction to be run by the mediator, who is the retired district court judge, Judge Linares. With a second mediation day of September 17th. Mediation is settlement negotiations overseen by an official mediator. But we did have an informal meeting this week because the hope was that they would come to the table with something reasonable beforehand, because Nick Salzano wants a favorable statement by somebody at his sentencing, including in particular the investors. But Nick Salzano's sentencing, by the way, to answer one of your questions on this list, was adjourned by the other parties, we have no say in that, till October 22nd. So October 22nd is when that'll be. It was not in August, it was pushed off. Same with the other two actions. Those are really older actions that were filed earlier on. We're discussing settlements with Scaturo and his son in connection with that claim. This is the number 17 is the $1 million or so of cash that was taken by them. Nick Salzano, you know, an investor brought in cash or investors brought in cash. Nick Salzano is willing to plead or to agree to a judgment for a little over $1,030,000 on that one. But Nick Salzano has got so many judgments and claims against him, we're not sure how collectible that is. Ray Grabato and Nick Salzano and Olena Badinska litigation. We have judgments against those folks and are simply executing. So we are being sued in one action that I think Rick mentioned. That is the action related to the Gutenberg property. But we had a hearing, and we're hoping that some discussions are positive and result in a positive resolution of that. But we filed a motion to dismiss, and that has been adjourned till, I think, next week. Now, these are the categories: investigation and settlement discussions. We're in discussions with and or investigating and drafting complaints against, in addition to the 18 that are pending, in addition to the ones that we've already been discussing settlement with outside of litigation, banks, law firms, accounting firms, and some of these are national, international entities that we've targeted for liability and recovery. So you may remember prior town halls. And in prior town halls, we talked about how we're investigating, how we issued subpoenas. Well, we got those subpoenas. We had some interviews. We've had some depositions. And now we've commenced actions. And others, we said, we're going to bring this action against you if you don't settle with us. And some of these discussions are ongoing, and some of them are mature. And we can't disclose those for obvious reasons. And so we filed this. We filed this motion. It's a docket number 4009, a motion to file terms of settlements included in the quarterly reports under seal. Why did we do that? We don't want you to think that that motion was filed because we don't want to show you something. The reason for this is because certain of the parties that we're talking to, if we settle with them and they say ABC accounting firm is liable for $100 million of fraud, they will defend that, litigate that, because their reputation is more important to them than settling it, because they'd rather have the defense. But if they can settle under the radar and give us $100 million that goes directly to you, they do that if they don't have to be in public and admit or have a judgment against them that they did something wrong. They've told us that if we can give you this and the settlement is in public, we may be happier to do that. The reason for this is you'll see the money, but you won't see necessarily if this motion is granted. You won't necessarily see who paid the money necessarily, or you won't necessarily see the terms of the settlement, but the money will be there. And the reason why that's, and it'll be on the reports, is because, like I said, they won't settle with us necessarily. They'll entrench themselves in litigation and defend themselves as opposed to settle if we can't do this. And this is at the defendant's request, not ours, in order to maximize your distribution. We've seen that because the numbers we discussed with them, once we said that the trust agreement and the plan allows us to do this, in our view, and our interpretation of the plan. We don't even need court approval for settlements under the trust or the plan, but the quarterly reports require summaries of settlements. We want to make sure that your return is as high as possible. So how is this translating in reality? A lot of these discussions, a lot of these litigations that you see here on this small summary chart, each one of these, you see how many defendants there are and how many defendants are and targets are in this are not even mentioned up here, have translated or are translating into recoveries. Based upon this work, both at the real estate and litigation level, we would anticipate, we can't guarantee it, but we do anticipate a distribution in 2024, and we do anticipate a distribution overall that will likely exceed the projected disclosure statement projections for recovery to investors. We don't want to give numbers until we know for sure how this pans out, but we are very encouraged by the proceeds and settlement discussions we're having, and we're hopeful that there will be a greater recovery to investors than the 25 to 35% in the disclosure statement. And we're targeting and hoping to get to that distribution process this year and get a distribution out to you in 2024. What are the impediments to that distribution? It's the next category on our agenda, which is obviously one, getting the cash in for the litigation and real estate, which we just went through. And the next is the claims reconciliation and objections process. We have already done one such motion. You've seen that. And now I think I'll turn it over to Mike as to the next steps.
Yes. So before the trust can make a distribution to investors, the first thing it really needs to do, and what we're in the process of doing, is getting rid of all duplicate and amended claims. What we need to have is we need to have a register where every investor has, or every creditor and investor has, one claim for the maximum amount that they've claimed. It doesn't mean it's allowed in that amount, but just one claim. And what will happen is when we have that done, the trust can make a distribution on all the allowed claims and make reservations for all the claims that are still disputed and not yet allowed or disallowed. So we need to get down to a single recovery for each investor, each creditor before we can do that. To do that, we started by filing the first omnibus claim objection, which I'm sure many of you are aware of. And I know I've spoken to many of you already about what that was about. That was to effectuate the contributing investor settlement and make sure that everybody who was a contributing investor has a single allowed claim in the amount that was agreed to and doesn't have all the proofs of claim floating around in different amounts. So we just have a single claim for every contributing investor. That was granted. So we're moving on to the next step, which is to basically get rid of the duplicate claims and the amended and superseded claims filed by all the investors, all the creditors. We are in the process of working on that right now. It is a cumbersome process because it requires us to actually go through every single proof of claim and determine which ones are duplicates, which ones are remaining claims. As you all remember, the debtors filed with about 135 different entities, and many of you filed claims against every single one of those entities. In the plan, the debtors were substantively consolidated, so there's only one entity left. So we're in the process of going through that to make sure that everybody has just one claim. Now, some investors filed one proof of claim for the entire amount, every single investment they made, and they duplicated that and filed it 6 times against 6 different debtors or whatnot. Other investors filed a different proof of claim for each individual investment they made. So for the former, we know we can find that one claim against the correct debtor, and we can eliminate all the other proofs of claim that are just simply duplicates of it. For the others, we have to figure out which claims add up to their total claim and then figure out which ones are the duplicates. So it's a cumbersome process. We're in the process of working through it. We believe we'll be in a position to file that motion in the next month, which will probably take another month to resolve. Once that is resolved, we will be in a position, I believe, to make a distribution, to make the reserves we need to make that distribution and to get cash out. We are very mindful of the fact that there are a number of investors who have IRA accounts. They're over the age of 73 and they have mandatory redemptions that they need to make this year. And we keep that in mind as we are pushing forward full steam to try and make a distribution this year. Again, we can't promise that. There are things that can pop up that make it difficult, if not impossible, to do that, but we are doing everything we can using all of our efforts to make that possible. The next stage is to go through all the non-contributing investor claims and get rid of all the duplicates of those so that we can then go to the process of looking at the claims that they asserted and trying to reach an agreement with them to bring them on board as contributing investors in the amount we've agreed to and get those claims settled. We're in the process of reaching out to non-contributing investors to try and get those settlements resolved, bring them on board. If you are a non-contributing investor because either you were listed on the excluded party list or because you opted out of the contributing investor settlement, you will be getting a call from us in the near future. Also, feel free to email me if you'd like to join the contributing investor settlement. We can get that resolved hopefully quickly. My email address is on the website. You can email me and we'll work out getting that resolved. We are also, as I said, doing this with respect to unsecured claims and administrative claims, other claims that were filed against the estate. We have to do it with respect to everything. As you recall, under the plan, class four claims, which are the unsecured claims, which the legitimate vendors, the people who actually did construction work for the debtors who were owed money on the petition date, those claims are being paid out in full before investor claims are settled. Those claims are disputed. We are working through getting rid of the duplicates and objecting to the claims that need to be objected to substantively. And that process is going forward as well. So, as I said, we are working on those exhibits that need to be filed with the objections. We anticipate those being filed in the next month and moving forward so we can make a distribution this year. Hopefully. I believe the next thing on our agenda is to go through the investor questions. We received a number of questions. Lewis, I'll let you take the first one.
Yeah, sure. So, like I think we mentioned it already and we talked about it, the progress we've made so far in terms of these discussions should be reflected in the distribution this year. That's the significance of this particular town hall, is that we've turned the tide and changed from merely preparing complaints, merely doing investigations, assembling the information, to asserting the claims and discussing resolution and transferring that and translating that into recoveries for you. So that's the process we are at. And we are beginning, we hope, to stockpile some recoveries. And so that's where we are on that. The next question was, what specifically is the holdup on making distributions of the general unsecured claims? To the general unsecured claims, we talked about that. Until the process of claims reconciliation and the determination of having adequate funds, less reserves, is made by our financial advisors and the liquidation trustee, until that is determined, that's when that will be made. That will be later this year when a determination will be made and when funds should be, we hope, distributed. What percentage of stated loss of capital is expected now that lawsuits and real estate has been assessed following 26 months since bankruptcy? There is no quote stated percentage right now. There has been no quote recovery or distribution out to investors. There is a estimated recovery on real estate reflected in the disclosure statement. The litigation continues to be a moving target, but we have cash settlements being discussed, et cetera, and that should be at the end of the day giving us a sense of where we are. But we do believe that there should be a more positive outcome, we hope, than what is reflected in the disclosure statement for recovery to investors. How many years will the payout take? That will be determined based upon real estate development that Rick talked about in terms of the sales and the market interest in that, plus how litigation goes in terms of whether or not parties will be willing to settle or dig their heels in litigation. We have been lucky so far that we haven't had the kind of litigation like they did in the Stanford Ponzi case, where against one defendant, it lasted 13 years. We are hoping that does not happen in our case, and we get more and more expeditious recoveries.
Next question is, real estate recoveries were estimated at 25 to 35% present value to early 2023. Is that still on track, and would imply a higher nominal recovery rate now? So yes, that would imply a higher nominal recovery rate now, because that number was taking what we expect the nominal recoveries would be, taking the present value of that nominal recovery and then figuring out what that was as a percentage of the total claims. I would say that if we're going nominal, it's probably a few percentage points higher than that, just in the nominal recovery. The real estate values, I will refer to Rick on this. I believe we are still pretty much on target for the most part with the real estate. We've been doing quite well, I believe, with the sales. Many of the sales have been coming in above our projections, not necessarily significantly above our projections. In some cases, yes, and in some cases, no. But they have been pretty much on target. When will distributions?
I think the rest of the questions, Mike, are the same, though.
There are always a lot of questions about when we will be making distributions and how much those distributions will be.
So I think the balance of them, I think we skipped the tax questions. And Tommy Fierro from AIRN will answer the tax questions. One question is, when will the K-1 for 2023 be available?
Just to recall, there were two K-1s for 2023. One K-1 for the period before August 25th, which was the effective date, and then there should be a second one for the remainder of the year, if I'm correct, Tommy, if you can confirm that.
Tommy, you there? I don't hear Tommy.
We can. I do know that the normal extension time for the filing of the tax returns was to September 15th. My expectation is that the tax return will be filed on September 15th and the K-1s for 2023 should come out shortly thereafter. When will we receive tax documents for 2023 and 2024? Well, 2024 tax documents don't get delivered, obviously, until the tax return for 2024 is filed. That won't be filed until next year. I can't say at this point when the tax return for 2024 will be filed. I know we will do what we can to get it filed as quickly as possible, but given the number of moving parts here, it's always quite likely that there'll be an extension requested as there have been the last several years.
Tommy is listed as in the meeting. So Tommy, maybe you have to unmute. Can you hear us? Let's see if I do that.
He said he doesn't have host, whatever that means.
He's listed as a co-host. Yeah, he is listed as a co-host.
Well, Amy, if you can try and work that out, maybe we can come back to the questions. I know the last question is if the investment is through an IRA account, does it qualify under the Ponzi scheme loss laws? You need to talk to your own individual accountants and your own individual tax attorneys with respect to whether that is the case or not. I don't see why it wouldn't, but again, I'm not a tax attorney, so please talk to your own individual accountants about your own individual situation.
All right, next question is, what was Salzano's sentence last week? As I mentioned, it was not last week, it was pushed to October 22nd, and we will certainly keep you apprised of that. Next, has RICO been determined against any bad actors? We are asserting RICO claims under particularly New Jersey civil RICO in the US construction case against virtually all the bad actors, including Nick Salzano, Dustin Salzano, John Farina, and others. That has not been determined yet. That is a very complex litigation issue. And really, rarely does RICO, although it entitles you to treble damages, meaning three times. So in that case, for example, more than $1 billion of damages is sought because that's what the RICO claim would translate to be. But in reality, there is not $1 billion of assets necessarily that we've seen to recover, but we do assert it, and we'll wait to see whether or not that is true, and we'll wait to see with how the trial progresses. How many years in prison is Art Scuturo facing? As I mentioned, we don't know, but his will likely be less than Nick's, which is 8 to 12, because he is he took a plea, so.
This question is Salzano behind bars or is he also moving freely like many other convicts and cheats? Nick Salzano is currently under house arrest, which means he's basically stuck at home with very limited opportunities to go elsewhere. He can, with permission, go and meet his attorneys. He can also, with permission, go to church, but doesn't really have much other freedom of movement beyond that. Obviously, it's not as cathartic as seeing him behind bars, but it is, he's not just moving around freely, able to go to the beach whenever he wants.
All right. So go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
Next question is just some logistical questions. Who do I contact to change bank account for investor claim distributions? I moved to a different state with different banks. If you have an address change, you should try to send that to Omni. If you want to CC us, we will make sure that Omni gets that and responds to you and updates their records to reflect your new address. When distributions are made in this case, they will be made via check, not via ACH. So they will be sent to the address that was listed on your proof of claim for where payments should be sent. So if you have a change of address since you filed the proof of claim, that needs to go through Omni. And again, just CC us and we'll make sure that they respond to you and make that change.
I think you answered the next one about
the next claims. One is about duplicate claims, which you've answered. The next one is about estimate on when the liquidation will be completed. We've kind of answered that as well. It's going to take some time. We have kind of turned the corner in terms of starting to settle and receive cash flow coming in. But again, the real estate is taking time and that's due to market factors as much as anything else. And I know the next question is about the 10-year extension on the Florida project. I know Rick answered that earlier. That was, you know, it was 10 years because that's what we could request. It doesn't mean we're going to wait 10 years to do it. It just makes sense to request the maximum extension of time for that. Real estate questions. Is it possible? I would like to see a bi-monthly or quarterly update on all building projects. I appreciate the efforts of the trustee. And that's what these meetings are intended to entail. You know, we try to provide as much as possible in terms of the detail on the real estate projects. You know, so that's, you know, we'll continue to do this, and we have these town halls every other month, bi-monthly. So litigation questions. What is the status of lawsuits and asset searches against Grabato? Lewis, you have an update on where Grabato
is? Yeah, sure. Grabato remains in the Philippines, as we understand it. We've actually been working. We have collected against. So let's talk about Grabato. We have a judgment against Grabato. We have already foreclosed upon and taken his house, which was 82 Osprey, where Salzano, Nicholas Salzano, was living, but it was owned by Grabato. We are pursuing him for other claims in the Philippines by seeking to serve him in the Philippines. It's a complex process, and it's been very difficult to navigate, but he doesn't have much in assets either. Alvarez and Marcel has looked. We haven't identified much in terms of assets in the Philippines, but we are continuing to pursue him. He is a named defendant in a number of actions. So we're continuing to pursue him. That's what that is.
Two questions. The last two questions are both RICO questions. One is the RICO statute considered on a case by case basis? If one case rules yes, then will the rest be following that established precedent? And the second is to elaborate on our efforts to pursue RICO claims. So racketeering claims, as Lewis discussed earlier, are very technical. They're hard. They do entitle you to 3x recovery. So if you have damages of 450 million, which is what we have here, you'd be entitled to recover 3x that 1.5 billion. You know, it's nice to have a piece of paper saying that you are entitled to recover $1.5 billion, but if they only have 30 million, doesn't get you much more than the other claims you have, which are for the 30 million. So we are pursuing those claims. One other benefit of those claims is that they give you attorney's fees, the right to for reimbursement of attorney's fees, which many other claims do not entitle you to. But again, it really depends on the collectability. Now, and then the second part of that question in terms of, is it considered on a case by case basis? With most of these legal issues, if you have a claim against one party and you're able to prove your claim against another party, it doesn't necessarily mean that you can apply that against another party. Sometimes you can, many times you cannot. Everybody has the opportunity to defend on their own grounds, and you can't, you know, offensively apply the judgments you have received against one party against another. So, you know, there would be some precedent that we would be able to achieve, but that doesn't necessarily mean that if we win one case against one party that we would necessarily win against another. And then the last thing about RICO is that it's very, very factually dependent, and specifically dependent upon the agreements that the individuals made to participate in the RICO enterprise. And so, you know, if one party made an agreement to participate, that doesn't necessarily mean that another party did. So it's really dependent on the individual.
So we have, I think, completed most of the original questions. A couple of came in at the end, and I'll address one or two of those. We already addressed some of the K1 questions. We addressed the list of the properties and the questions about distribution. But one question was, who was NRA's accountant, and are they still in practice? So they had several accountants over a period of time. They include Cipolla, who you've seen in our list is being sued by us. You've seen Whipley, that's the other accountant, they're being sued by us. They had Eisner Amper near the end, roughly December of 2021, that came in for tax purposes, and they continued through the bankruptcy. They came in after a lot of the fraud occurred and came in just for tax and other purposes initially, but expanded a little during the bankruptcy. And then there's Van Dune, or Van Dyne, however you want to pronounce them. And I will not comment further on them because of the pending investigation as to Van Dune, but you will see their name again. Those are all the accounts that we're aware of. So those are all the questions. I think, Matthew, I'll turn it over to you if you have any closing statements or comments on behalf of the trust.
Thanks, Lewis. Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
So I just wanted to comment on some of the things that I heard throughout the town hall today. The investors on the call have heard numerous times about the dozen plus, I think 18 complaints that we filed against the family members, the perpetrators, the professionals. I'm sure people on the call realize this, but it's not just as simple as filing the complaint and then it goes to a hearing and you get a judgment and collect. I mean, the complaint is just the initial part of it. Once the complaint is filed, oftentimes, many times, the defendants attack not just the complaint, but the procedures and the process, the documents, the discovery. All of these are fact-intensive disputes. And so when we sue people, you know, of course, they hit us with requests for documents and we hit them with requests for documents. And sometimes we even have disputes about the scope of the documents that should be produced, but we're gathering hundreds, thousands of documents in these matters from the people that Lewis mentioned, Cipolla and U.S. Construction, U.S. Development, Salzano, their principals, Media Effective. Many of these parties were gathering the documents, and we've received some documents, and sometimes we don't receive documents, and then we send subpoenas and we do motions to compel. And every step of the way, these people are fighting us, but we're fighting back. We are not backing down. We're going to pursue this zealously and relentlessly till we get to a favorable outcome. So Media Effective is just one example. Since the last town hall, we had the trial in that matter where we're waiting on the court's ruling in that case. You know, as Lewis mentioned, we're going after not just Media Effective, but the investors saw in the document that Lewis brought up, the complaint is not just against Javier Torres and Media Effective, but a number of people to which after he received the money, he then subsequently transferred the money to his church and to a number of other entities. And we've included all of them as defendants in our action. So when the investors hear that we filed 18 complaints, it's not just 18 defendants, one defendant per complaint, it's 18 complaints with dozens and dozens of defendants, maybe hundreds of defendants. Some of those complaints, in one individual complaint might have more than a dozen defendants. I know there was questions raised about Salzano and where he is. Yes, I can confirm that he's on house arrest. He has attended some of the meetings that we have conducted, and I've been to those meetings personally. I have seen him, and I can tell you that when he is at these meetings, his officer contacts him to keep track of his whereabouts and confirm that he is where he says that he is. And then when he goes back to his house, like Michael Ott said, it's not the house that was living at before, because we took that from him. We sued, we got a judgment, and that house is now ours. And again, it's not smooth sailing, because we went in there and there was water damage, so we hired a contractor to fix it, and that's now being fixed, and it's going to be put on the market, and the proceeds from that house are going to go to the investors on this phone call. And I can't take the credit for that. I mean, Rick, Bud and his team are the ones that are hiring the contractors to repair that, but we have regular updates regarding that process, and I can assure the investors that that is underway. We're continuing with these investigations, interviews, the depositions, and like I say, we will continue to do that. And you guys on the and ladies on the video, you've got a great team working for you with Ice Miller, Alvarez, and Marcel. Our team includes a former FBI investigator, former New Jersey Bureau of Securities investigator. You've got the A team working for you here, and we're going to continue working on that. You also heard some updates about the claims docket. As Michael mentioned, all of that has to be in place and resolved before we can make a distribution to investors. And we're working on that as quickly as we can. I just want people to understand, because you guys have seen, I mean, in the news over the years past, Lewis mentioned Sanford, but there's been a number of Ponzi scheme disputes. And I would analogize this to other disputes where you have massive amounts of plaintiffs and investors and creditors. And almost universally in these types of matters, it takes years before money goes out the door. So I would just, you know, respectfully remind people, the trust has been in existence not even 1 year, almost just 1 year now. But we are working hard to make an initial distribution in the coming months. It's our hope to make that initial distribution by the end of the year. Just as a point of clarity, you know, Lewis did say that we are quite optimistic that the ultimate distributions to investors is going to be in excess of that 25 to 35% set forth into the disclosure statement. That's not the initial distribution. We are working to make an initial distribution by the end of this year. It will not be for that 25 to 35%. It will be a partial distribution because we haven't completed the litigation. We haven't completed the sales of the real estate, but it is in an effort to get money, leaving reserves that we need to complete the litigation in real estate, pushing the rest of the money out the door in the form of a partial distribution. On real estate, I've said this before and I'll continue to sing their praises. Rick Budd, Tommy Fierro, Kevin Lynch are doing a phenomenal job completing the real estate projects and liquidating those. I personally am really excited about the Grand that's nearing completion. The location of the Grand and the station, that 4901 Bergen Line property, I mean, those are premier locations, excellent access to the city. I mean, you can pretty much get door to door from those properties to somewhere within Midtown in under an hour, certainly under an hour by car and probably under an hour by public transit. And the guys are just doing a wonderful job fixing the defects and shortcomings from the prior NRIA developers, of which there were many defects and shortcomings, and getting those projects up and running. I mean, the Grand is really one of the prized properties in the portfolio. So to hear that nearing completion is just really, really good news. We're going to continue to work on this from every angle to maximize value. And to the extent anybody has questions, certainly feel free to reach out, and we look forward to seeing you on the next town hall.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, everyone, for participating, and we appreciate your time, and hopefully this was informative. So thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.